Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello, everybody. Just to kick things off, we've got some news from Early Excellence just to get things started. So new for 2026, we have an outdoor roadshow that is coming to a school or a setting near you. It's a day really focused on outdoor learning. It's packed with expert advice, hands-on examples, and also, of course, fresh inspiration. There are going to be within the day three sessions. You can join us for one of those sessions, or you can get a day pass and join us for the full day, which would be fabulous. What we'll do is we'll put a link in the podcast information so you can click on that and find out more and also book your place. Now, with all of that in mind, I've got the perfect podcast episode for you. Here we go. I've got a chat with the fabulous Claire Underwood, who joins us this week to discuss the development of a magical outdoor space, and she reflects also on creativity, connection, well-being and belonging, all powerful things, of course, when you think about outdoor learning. So here you go. Here's my podcast episode, my Early Excellence podcast episode with the brilliant Claire Underwood. Claire, it is lovely to see you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Andy. It's such an honour to be asked. I really enjoy listening to this podcast.
It's great that you could join us. It really is. What I thought we'd do is start with an introduction, if that's okay. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and your role, first of all? Would that be all right?
Of course. So I have been teaching for nearly 20 years now, and I have taught full time in some very different contexts. My first context was a very affluent area, but the school was very creative, lots of arts, and yes, learned a lot there. Then I moved to a very different context, and I absolutely adored that school, and ended up going along a leadership bit of line. So I was early years lead, assistant head teacher, and I even did two terms as an associate head teacher while still teaching in nursery, because I was adamant that I wasn't going to stop playing with the children. So that was quite an interesting couple of terms. Since then, I've had a child, and I'm now part-time 4 days a week across two different schools. One day in the village school where I live, and the school that my son attends, doing a day of forest school, and 3 days in an urban school where I do 1 day of forest school and 2 days in the nursery.
Fantastic. Gosh, what a varied role that you have. And yeah, really interesting career to date. Yeah, brilliant. Now we're going to talk about all sorts of different things as part of the podcast chat, aren't we? We're going to talk about your own setting, so where you work for most of the time at Hopping Hill. And in particular, we're going to talk about the Wonderwood, which is there, which is it sounds almost like a project that you've been developing over a period of time. And I first got to hear about it when you spoke at an event for Early Excellence a couple of months ago now. And I wasn't at that event, but I knew that it had been advertised, and I saw that you were speaking there. I heard all about it from my colleagues. So I want to know a bit more about it firsthand. But also, alongside talking about the Wonderwood, we're also going to talk about the adult role as well as part of that, which I think is really interesting. Mm. So there's lots that we're going to cover, lots that we're going to explore. I know that people listening in are going to find this interesting and motivating as well, because you're such an enthusiastic person. You're somebody who I think really inspires people in the sorts of things that you talk about, but also the the sorts of things that you've reflected on and considered as part of your practice. Okay, so let's crack on with this then. Let's start with, because we're going to be talking about Hopping Hill. Mm-hmm. So one of the schools that you work at, can you give us a little bit of information about Hopping Hill itself, a bit of a starter?
Yes, Hopping Hill is an urban school on the edge of Northampton town, and it's a two-form entry school with a large nursery attached to the school. So I teach in the nursery, and we have quite a range of families attending the school, lots of different needs and behaviours to support. But the thing that I really love about Hopping Hill is, as a whole school, there's a real essence and deep strive for kindness through all things, kindness and understanding. And as a school, we really do work with therapeutic strategies. So that's a really important part of the context of the school. And I even did my work experience there a long time ago. So it's quite interesting.
So it's very much a part of you, of you in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you've been there such a long time, and that actually you've really grown and developed alongside the school growing and developing, which I think is great. Okay. Yeah. So let's get on to then the Wonderwood. Tell us about it. Tell us about the starting points of it, first of all, if you wouldn't mind.
So the very first beginning, the first glimmer of Wonderwood was the very first time I went to look around the school and chat to the head teacher. And as soon as I walked through the school gates, I don't know what it was, but my attention was drawn to the small little woods. And when I say woods, I mean, it's a collection of trees. So if you could call it woods, but the few little trees, and there was some bunting. And I remember just seeing the bunting flapping in the wind and just had a real, this is where I need to be. Just that real sense of excitement. And yeah, so that was right at the beginning. And then luckily I got the job and was teaching in the nursery. At that point, so I found out more about that space that I had been drawn to, and it was a sensory garden, which one of the teaching assistants had done an incredible project to develop. But it was at that point locked, so nobody was really going in it. And I was like, what's going on? There's this space. We need to take the children in there. So I found the key and unlocked it and started taking groups of children into the woods. And at that point, I was using my background in forest school to do some forest school inspired activities alongside usual early years outdoor play and stories and everything. So we were happily doing that. And then COVID came along, and I was just mulling over how I was going to logistically have all the children in a nursery, keeping everything clean and disinfected and all those things that we had to try and do. And a bit of a mad idea just popped into my head of, why don't we just be out in the little woods and use the walkway space? It's basically a path that leads from the gate down to the nursery with grass either side. One of the sides is a bank, which we've now discovered is fantastic for rolling down and rolling tyres down. I just had this idea of putting up a bell tent and being outside. And at that point, the head teacher, she just loved all my mad ideas. So I kind of feeling a little bit silly, I went to her and just said, how about this? And she said, yeah, go for it. So I managed to get a big discount on a bell tent from a really kind company when I explained what we were hoping to do with it, and put the bell tent up, made a trolley of really carefully selected resources that we'd push out each day, and all of that could be cleaned at the end of each day. And we were outside. We were outside in Wonderwood, and it was a really special, magical time that we all needed. I think we needed that connection to nature, that being grounded, being present and connected together. And all of us as a team, all of the adults were like, we can't lose this. This is really special. We can't. So when all the restrictions were lifted and we were back to, you know, business as normal, we continued using the Wonderwood space. You know, times had changed. We didn't have the same number of adults. So there was really no way of me taking out small groups anymore. So we all go out together, the whole nursery and all the staff, we all go out to Wonderwood, and we're out there most weeks. I wouldn't say we're out there in the most horrendous weather, because with three-year-olds, that's not always the best idea. But when it's a good, you know, when we're all up for it, then we all go out. And I'll say more about what we do out there.
Yeah, it just sounds amazing. Can you give us a flavour of the sorts of things that the children do when they're in the space in Wonderwood? You know, what sorts of things happen? What would you typically see?
So it's really interesting. I think what I find really interesting is actually being in a space that is just nature, and we don't have a lot of resources out there. So we have tyres that are out there all the time. So the tyres are fantastic for pushing, rolling down the hill. We also have log dogs, love a log dog. For anyone that hasn't met a log dog before, it is just a log with string attached to it. But the children absolutely adore their log dogs, taking them for walks. There's lots of negotiation when the leads get tangled up, and a lot of imaginative play, of course, as well, you know, going off to the park, talking about, you know, the temperament of their dog, or if it's a puppy, or lots of different things for the log dogs. We also discovered that in between the hedge, the hedgerow, and the fence, there was a small tunnel that we could all walk through. We call it the secret tunnel. And honestly, I'll never forget the day that we found this tunnel. And in fact, the head teacher was inside looking out and just saw my head appear in one of the gaps in the hedge. She was like, what is going on? But the secret tunnel is always a highlight. The first time I take a new year group out to discover the secret tunnel, I always get so excited, because for young children, that tunnel is such an adventure.
Yeah.
You know, trekking through it, and you have to, you know, really negotiate the space, because there's roots underneath and branches coming down, but it's dark and it's exciting. So yeah, the tunnel is massive. So, I mean, these are the things that are just out there all the time. Exactly. And then I layer on, because within the nursery, we generally have a meta-narrative, a story that is our kind of vehicle for everything we do. And so the story links, you know, often outside. Sometimes it's out in Wonderwood where we find the hook or the problem. Or we need to go out there to find more information. So I have a kind of woodland elf puppet called Sage. And Sage is always sitting in the same spot in the tree. And he's like our wise, all-seeing person who guides us. So if, you know, of a morning, I might have left a trail of biscuit crumbs. And then there might be a secret symbol, and I'll say, oh my, I think this is the secret symbol of the gingerbread man. And then we'll discuss together, where has he been? Has he been into nursery? And we'll say, what can we do to find out more? And let's go and ask Sage. So then we'll all, you know, do all the logistics of going to the toilet, putting our coats on, do all of that. Then we all troop outside. And we go to Sage, and then Sage will have more information. So he might have a story map, or he might have the story, or I might have set up a trail with the characters of the story, you know, in different positions around Wonderwood that we walk around and collect. So yeah, we were doing this general, stories and songs. And there was a lot that I'd learned from my Talk for Writing training, layered on a lot of Greg Bottrell from yes. Can I Go and Play Now? That was all kind of mishmashed together. And yes. then I found out when we were doing these things, we were actually doing immersive theatre. We didn't even yeah. realise we were doing this immersive theatre.
But that's what comes across, I think, is that actually in your practice generally, what you're doing is you've magpied lots and lots of different strands from different things that have influenced you over time, from yes. from Forest Schools training
yeah.
to kind of that sort of the impact of storytelling,
yes.
you know, that kind of idea, and
yeah.
the idea of open-ended opportunities for young mm-hmm. children, and a hook to get them started in terms of a starting point, but not knowing where it's going. All yes. of those sorts of things
yeah.
sound like they're very much a part of what you do.
Definitely. And it's so, it feels so good to be at this like point in my career where I've had, you know, that really, you know, I've spent that time crafting and developing. And now, honestly, it just feels like magic is crackling in my fingers sometimes. It's so exciting, you know, where can we take this? And,
yes.
you know, it doesn't need to be onerous. It so much comes from being in a place where it is, like you said, open-ended, and we're not entirely sure where this is going to take us. And I think in a time where so much of what we teach, luckily I do get to avoid a lot of this being in nursery, but for those teachers that are following a scheme and have so much of it is scripted and pre-prescribed, I think it's so important to make space for that openness. And I just think Wonderwood is such a great way or space of doing that. So taking an idea, but really opening it out and seeing where it takes you.
Yeah, being able to run with it. And I think yeah. I think the other thing that I think comes across really clearly from what you were saying as well is that you and your team, you see, when you're there with the children, you see the world through their eyes.
Yes.
You know, that you're seeing what they will find interesting and you're experiencing it at the same level alongside them. Which sounds yeah. like a really simple thing, but actually it's not that easy. You know, mm-hmm. it's something that you kind of have to work on, I think, that idea of really throwing yourself into something with the same kind of enthusiasm and that at the same level that the children do it. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, when you were talking about the tunnel that you'd found, and that you, one of the, your favorite things is to experience going through that tunnel with a new mm-hmm. group of children.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing there is you're entering into their world.
Yeah.
You're doing exactly what they will want to do. Mm-hmm. And that is important. It sounds odd, I know, and I know it sounds daft, but actually it is important, because when children see you wanting to enter into their world and to do the same things that they are doing, they will then feel more comfortable with you alongside what they are doing. So, you know, when you are then exploring the log dogs, or when you're doing whatever they're doing, they see you as part of what they're doing, and they know that you are part of it, and they will then share things with you and tell you things and describe things to you and enter into that story narrative with you because you've entered into their world. Mm-hmm. Whereas if, as an adult outdoors or anywhere, if you're on the outside looking in,
mm-hmm.
you don't really get as much out of it, I don't think. And the children don't get as much out of it in terms of their relationship with you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I just think that, I mean, how lucky are we to be able to hold on to that magic of childhood and definitely seeing the world through the children's eyes. And I feel like I'm continually learning, because the children's perspective of the world is so different, and it's such an honor to be able to step into their world. I taught a boy in the nursery who was autistic, and for ages I'd attempt to play with him and play alongside, and he just couldn't see me. I honestly felt like I was a ghost. He couldn't see me. And I just started through my therapeutic training, because I've trained as a therapeutic practitioner in the outdoors with a company called The Therapeutic Forest. And I learned so much more about intensive interactions. And I started playing around with that and practicing that. And I just started mirroring and echoing the sounds he was making. And honestly, he just turned and saw me. And it was such a powerful moment. He saw me. And from then on, I just kept playing with this. And I'd mirror all his movements and the vocalizations he was making. And I started to actually, I mean, I never could completely, but I started to see the world through his eyes. And I honestly, you know, and you're like, wow, I've learned so much from those interactions. And just taking that forward with all the different children. But it was interesting, because I was reflecting on how I have, I think since having my first child, I see it in a lot of my friends and colleagues as well. Something kind of shifts, I think, when we get into our 30s. And I've been exploring like my well-being. And so, you know, I've been practicing different strategies for breathing and just staying present and grounded and calmer. And since doing that, I completely feel like that has made such a positive impact on my role as a teacher. Because I reflect in my 20s, I would grip my teeth, you know, because it is overwhelming. You've got all these children.
Yeah.
And you want to support them. You want to help them. You want to essentially kind of fix their problems for them. And I'd kind of grip my jaw, and I'd feel sometimes that I'd kind of held my breath and, okay, I'm over here. I'm helping you. Yes, just coming. Just got to finish this. Then I'll be with you. And I've learned actually now, or learning, I can't say I've learned it, but those strategies for me, to slow down, keep my jaw relaxed, be breathing, not be holding that tension, but also recognizing that I cannot fix all and I cannot fulfill all of the children's needs. Sometimes in the nursery, you know, I've got kind of 8 children around me all saying my name at the same time. And it is about just having really kind but clear boundaries and explaining. And I think that's massive learning as well. I think particularly in nursery, when the children have been used to having, you know, an adult that's trying to keep them happy and keep them, you know, keep all their needs met and all their wants met as well. But that can't happen in a big group setting.
It's a different dynamic, of course.
It's a totally different dynamic. Yeah. And I think it is, you know, there's ways of doing that are with love, and giving them strategies to just wait for a little while and to see. So I think actually working on boundaries is massive. And I just feel in our teaching profession, we really care about the children, and we want to, you know, support, but you cannot just give and give and give. And it's not actually beneficial for the children to see you as this ever giving that is always, you know, so that's...
And you run the risk of burning out, I think.
Yes.
You know, very easily, I think, really. And what you've described, I'm sure, will be familiar to so many people who listen to the podcast, of, you know, that level of need within the school, within the classroom that you have, but also that feeling of kind of wanting to give everything to it, I think is understandable, but at the same time, it isn't sustainable. Mm. And I think you're right. You do have to find a way of protecting yourself to a point where actually you are still giving, But there is a point at which you know that this isn't healthy for you, really. Yeah. And that's not easy at all. And that does come with, I suppose, experience and time. You know, as you were saying, that actually a point in your life, you get to a point in your life where you think, well, actually, teaching isn't just it for me. This isn't everything. And I have to find a balance. I have to find a way of making it sustainable for me, really, which is very difficult, I think. Really difficult.
And I think it would look different for different people. But I think sometimes for me, just voicing, you know, oh, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. Everyone's talking at the same time. Let's all take it in turn. Do you know what I mean? It's just voicing
a
bit about how you're feeling. And I think, again, the training, the therapeutic training, it's saying actually it's voicing to the children that I feel quite tired today, or, you know, I've got a headache today, because actually that's authentic and you want authentic connection. And the children know if you're a little bit off, and if you're just trying to grin through it, there can be a little bit of a, oh, what's going on? And is it me that's, you know, is it me that's causing this? So I think just voicing your needs, and that's great, you know, for modeling and modeling to other colleagues and the children too. So, think, circling back to like the Wonderwood space, I think being outside straight away just gives you that space and that freedom. So, you know, and there isn't the overwhelm of like all the resources everywhere as well, and managing the resources. And you can really, we talked about that being present. And like some of my favorite things to do when we're in Wonderwood is just to really sit and marvel and observe like the mini beasts and the plants and the flowers, and just doing things like that can be so just calming. And it changes that dynamic, I think, because, you know, I can have the same group of children that inside were wanting to tell me this and show me this, and when we're all sat looking at the same thing, I don't know, it's just like this calm veil like drops over us.
Yes.
And all of a sudden we're talking and we're reflecting and we're asking questions, but it's so much more, I think, because we're all present looking at the same thing.
It is about being present, isn't thing. It?
Yeah.
I think it is about that. Yeah. It's interesting. A number of things I think just sort of occurred to me. First of all, I think the idea that Wonderwood itself came out of, which a time, you know, during COVID, which was in itself a stressful time for everybody. Mm. And that actually you sought out space outside, partly because it was more manageable, I suppose, in terms of those COVID times. And like you say, cleaning things and so, you know, all of that, how do you manage the logistics and stuff. But also, I think that you probably quite naturally sought out a space which was calming at a time which was stressful, which is, again, understandable. What's great, actually, is that beyond that, you've built on that. You didn't stop at the end of COVID. You carried it on. You kept it going, which is great. But also, I think what you were saying about you being aware of yourself as an adult and how you're feeling within the space, I think has a knock-on effect for the children, in that I think young children look to the adults in terms of stress and in terms of kind of how they move about the space and how frantic it can be and so on. And I think there's almost sometimes a kind of a chicken and egg type situation in our practice. I'm certainly aware of that from my own practice at times in the past, where I think you see issues happening, you see things happening around you, and you dash from one thing to another thing to another thing, and you're kind of putting out fires almost. Mm. And understandably, because, you know, early years practice can be like that.
Mm.
But at the same time, I've known times when I've stopped and not chased things around the room and tried to sort of put out fires, you know, in that way.
Mm.
But instead I've stopped and tried to be calm.
Mm.
And that in those moments, what's happened is that actually the children have responded to me stopping and me calming down physically in terms of moving around the space. And that actually you've, through doing it, modeled the calm that calmness in terms of looking more closely at something or being more engaged in something. Mm-hmm. And it brings everything down a notch. Yeah. And it's an odd thing to try to describe because it sounds a bit kind of a bit odd to describe it in that way. But and it's only through having had the experience of doing it that I think it's easy to sort of say, well, it does make sense.
Mm.
Do you see what I mean? Yeah. It sounds like that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, there's definitely a kind of read in the room. I don't know if it's energy, but you get a feeling, don't you?
Yeah.
You know? And I think that does definitely come with experience. But I think it's when you're present and grounded, you can actually tune into that a little bit more. Whereas I think when you're up in your head thinking, I need to do this, got to do that. What are they doing over there? But when you actually stop and feel the room, because sometimes I'll be like, it's really noisy, like the noise level feels loud. And you actually stop and look around and you're like, but it's all really purposeful, like it's okay. Or sometimes when they first come in, I mean, we do try as they come in to have one of our outdoor areas open pretty much as soon as they come in. Because I think there are some children that need to come in and go straight into that environment.
Yeah.
And I think that's key as well. But if there are times when it isn't open, you can feel it in the room. And I think it's so obvious to me now. But I think it's definitely something to work on and to tune into a little bit more, because that helps guide me so much. And I think it's not always, if you can, I really appreciate in different settings, there's different expectations. I'm really feel privileged and lucky that I can guide the day pretty much how it needs to be for the children.
Yes.
We have the same routine every day, but it doesn't have to happen by the clock at all. So, you know, the children might come in and they're all deeply engaged. And I'm looking around, I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to stop and do a carpet time now. You know, it's having that flexibility. And I think it's so vital with young children, because otherwise you're interrupting just because the clock says it's time to. You know, the clock isn't the boss. So, you know, if you can have that flexibility, and I think sometimes we, you know, as practitioners expose these time frames on ourselves for no reason, you know. I mean, there wouldn't be anyone in leadership that would come in and start asking about the time or, you know, anything. So I think it's worth reflecting if you are, you know, kind of really defined by the time, you know, where is that coming from? Is that vital, or is that something we've just imposed on ourselves?
It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
It's about ownership, isn't it?
Mm.
And knowing the reasons for why you do certain things, maybe at certain points in the day. You know, if you feel that it works and there is a time for it, and if it's kind of a particular time because you found that it works, then of course that's great.
Yeah.
But if actually you're stopping the children for snack time when actually they were all engaged anyway, and that's now getting in the way of their engagement, then, you know, it's important to reflect on that, isn't it?
Yeah, because it just gives you so much more spaciousness. And I really feel that is where the magic happens. It's the same at Forest School when I'm outside. It's just having that time and space to really look at things and really, be connected and have those conversations.
But time is an interesting one. I think in my experience, the best relationships between adults and children, but also the highest levels of engagement happen when time runs away with us.
Yeah.
You know, when actually, you know, you start something, like you said before about, you know, the kind of that immersive theatre kind of experience, you start something and then before you know it, it's become something else and then something else.
Yeah.
And it's led you down this path of being together. And before you know it, it could be an hour's gone by or more, you know, very easily. And that's when the best learning happens, I think. Yeah. That's when the magic happens, is when time kind of runs away with you a bit and you're not restricted by time in that way.
Definitely. And I think that is one of the key elements of Wonderwood. And so many times we go out and exactly what you described happens. And then, you know, I won't have looked at a clock and then I'll go over to my iPads and I'll think, oh, gosh, we've got to go in soon. You know, time does definitely change and transform out there. So, yeah, it's lovely. And I think it is, we talked about that kind of power and control. You know, it is, I think, learning outdoors, you do relinquish some of your control that you have in the classroom.
Yes.
You know, the weather, the resources, you know, things. And so you do just have to kind of accept and flow with what's happening. And that, I mean, that definitely gets easier over time. But as soon as you are accepting and flowing, it takes a lot of the stress away as well.
Absolutely. And I think within all of that, you are sending signals to the children, clear mm-hmm. signals that you're following them, you know, whether you're talking about the kind of that sort of immersive theatre, that there's an open-ended nature to it where you're following them, but also that you're enjoying what they're doing. You're enjoying the experiences alongside them. You're part of it too. You're not on the outside looking in. You're very much a part of it. And I know from talking to you before that you also put a lot of time and effort into sort of routines, daily mm. routines of mm. really making sure that the children feel a close bond
yes.
to yourself and to each other.
Yeah.
And that there are those sorts of routines. And I wondered whether we could talk through some of those, because I think they're really interesting, that I think will get people thinking.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. All the routines are really about building that sense of belonging. That's really important to me, that we feel like we all belong and we are a community together in the nursery. So we do similar things each day. So we tend to, when we draw together on the carpet, we have a song that we sing when it's time to come to the carpet. And then we have a Hopping Hill song that we sing every day. And it actually says, Hopping Hill is where I belong. That's how it finishes. And it always makes me feel a bit emotional. But I just think that sense of belonging, I see so many adults that aren't happy and aren't secure because they're seeking that belonging. So I think to feel that is massive. And so we sing the song and then we all breathe together. We just take a deep breath. It's so funny because other teachers will go in and the children will be like, no, we do two breaths together. You know, they're so used to the routines. So we'll breathe together. And then we have a little morning routine of kind of simple yoga type stretches that we all do together. And we sing a song again, a hello song. And it's kind of call and response. And I think that's fantastic as well in nursery for that self-regulation. So I am quite clear. It's my turn to sing and then it's their turn. We also on a Friday, it tends to be a Friday, it doesn't have to be, tends to be a Friday, we have a carpet disco, because I realised, and I don't know whether this was learning through the COVID times, but the things that really glue you together are those fun times. And I know for me in my family, it's putting the music on and dancing in the kitchen. I mean, that was so important to so many people, that dancing in the kitchen together. So I wanted to bring that to nursery. So I have a playlist, and it's also a lovely time to expose to all different types of music as well. But we just play some music and we all dance together. But also while we're doing that, I've got my therapeutic head on and I'm mirroring the children's moves. So I'm trying to spend, you know, a few seconds mirroring each child, going round, getting that eye contact and copying them as closely as I can with my body, because in that you're being seen, you know, you're really seen and understood and somebody cares, you know, that
yeah.
So that is just such a simple way of having fun together, but also, you know, without words, making, helping the children to feel that yes. sense of belonging that is so important.
Absolutely. What you're describing though as well is very much the bedrock of interaction, isn't it? You know, you're talking about call and response, that turn taking, that back and forth, that of course we know is so important as part of communication and language development. You're talking about mirroring, which of course is a great strategy for building relationships with children, that they don't just feel that actually somebody is telling them what to do, but actually that you're interested in what they are doing and you're seeing them. For example, you know, that all of that kind of thing, it's the starting point of effective interaction that is powerful when you think that if you're doing that on a regular basis with your children as part of your Friday routines, but also a lot of what you've been talking about has been about mirroring and about seeing the children and about entering into their world. Very similar sorts of themes are coming through, I think, in your practice. Yeah. And actually, that's very powerful in lots of ways. But you could look at it specifically around communication and language skills and say, well, actually, that's right at the starting point, isn't it? If you're wanting children to really engage and to feel supported and nurtured and to be able to communicate and to talk about what interests them, you're developing all of those key things there, aren't you? Without a doubt, you've got such a lot in place there that's part of effective practice, really.
Definitely. Yeah, really agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Claire, it's been wonderful to talk to you. It really has. I mean, it's just so interesting to talk about so many different things that are part of your practice that have developed and, you know, your reflections over time on what's worked and what hasn't worked and how you're building on that practice over time and really creating something that I think is very much magical and child-centered. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been brilliant to chat to you.
Oh, thank you, Andy. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Claire for joining us for the podcast this week. It was great to chat to Claire all about the development of that magical space. And you could just feel, I think, the passion and the real motivation and drive to really do wonderful things in terms of that outdoor space. You know, you could really feel that. Yeah, really inspiring stuff. Now, as I said earlier on in the introduction, we've got for 2026, we've got our outdoor roadshow coming up and it's going to fill up fast. So do get your place booked early. We are coming to schools and settings right the way across the country. There's a link here in the podcast information, or you can go to our website, earlyexcellence.com, to book your place, and we will see you there.